10 till midnight. By Zepskies. Rating is teening up audiences. No archive warnings apply. Category is female-male. Fandom is supernatural. Relationships: Dean Winchester / reader, Dean Winchester / you, Dean Winchester / plus-sized reader, Professor Dean Winchester / student reader. Characters: Dean Winchester, reader, you. Additional tags: Professor Dean times grad student reader, plus size reader, curvy reader, romance, mutual pining, sexual tension, references to Shakespeare, mythology references, humor. Summary: A chance encounter outside of the classroom shifts the way you see your professor forever. Author's note: Here's a one-shot for Chevrolet Dean's 500-follower celebration. This also fulfills a request for one of my lovely Patreon members, Red Hoodie One, who wanted to see AU Professor Dean with a plus-sized student reader. The reader is a graduate student, mid-20s, and Dean is in his 30s in this, so not really a wide age gap, but we're still flirting with a gray area here. Tags, warnings: graduate student reader, plus-sized reader, Shakespeare geekery, mythology, and other nerdy classic lit references. AU Brady sighting, sexual tension, mutual pining, ? We must starve our sight from lover's food till morrow deep midnight. From A Midsummer Night's Dream, Act 1, Scene 1, Hermia to Lysander. The ash cloud of exhaust rose up from the sidewalk steam grates. It infiltrated your nose as you hurried down a few well-worn concrete steps and into the bowels of the subway, a transition into deeper darkness. To you, that acrid mini-plume of pollution was the smell of New York City. Old cigarette buds and weed hash, fresh taquinos and hot dogs wafting from the open door of the bodega on the corner, mixed with a whiff of piss. This was the city of broke creatives clinging to their fragile dreams with both hands, usually while the natives rolled their eyes. You were one of those shiny, happy people with a dream and the battle-tested will to make it happen, especially tonight. You finally got to see a play on Broadway, an excellent production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. You replayed your favorite scenes in your mind like a 1940s movie reel, except it was live in Technicolor. An unconscious smile spread across your lips, but you had to hurry. Your train was about to leave in. You checked the time on your phone, 10 minutes to midnight, and compared it to the digital sign up ahead. Your eyes widened. Shit! 1 minute? You had no choice but to try and run in your heels. That had you skidding to the open doors as they began to close, but you just managed to slip inside, albeit literally slipping with a yelp. A man saved you by grabbing hold of your arm and waist before you fell, bunching the fabric of your coat beneath his hand. You gasped when you stared up at a familiar face. A sharp jawline covered with stubble, just neat enough to be respectable. Dark brows shaded over green eyes trained on you. Bowed lips pursed with confusion. "Professor?" you said, breathless and shocked. He was just as baffled, but he finished helping you up as your name fell from his lips.
"You okay?"
he asked. You nodded and thanked him from the save, still catching your breath.
"Here, sit down,"
he said, gesturing to a couple of empty seats on the subway. You joined him in sitting, though you ignored the stare of the guy standing closest to you who was holding onto a rail. He wore jeans and dirty hipster Vans, a brown bomber jacket, and a gray beanie. The stench of weed and cheap cologne clung to him. And his gaze followed you until you sat down. Slightly unsettled, you were subtle in the way you angled yourself toward the man beside you. Professor Dean Winchester. He really was the last person you expected to see on your way home tonight. You still couldn't believe you ran right into him. But then, you noticed the playbill sticking out of his coat pocket. His coat looked more expensive, a dark charcoal gray with a high collar, and it suited him.
Oh, you saw the play too?
you said in excitement, showing him your own playbill that you fished out of your purse. You told him about it a month ago, after his lecture on fairy lore. You thought he might enjoy a play that was all about the convergence between the fairy realm and the human realm. He'd admitted that he'd never seen a Shakespeare play live, but he said he'd look into it. You didn't think he was actually taking you seriously, though.
Yeah, I did. I've never been a big Shakespeare guy, truth be told. But you hooked me,
he said. When he smiled, it made the corner of his eyes crinkle a little. You couldn't help but smile, too, every time you noticed that, even though it made your cheeks warm in a blush. He really had no business being this handsome. And the suit, all crisp and black, paired with a classic off-white dress shirt and a black pinstripe tie. Clearly, he'd dressed for the occasion of going to the theater, because usually he was one of the chillest professors you knew. He showed up to class in jeans, boots, plain Henleys and jackets, though never without his watch, a classic leather timepiece with a silver watch face and bold black numbers. It was so vintage, you'd asked about it once when you met with him to talk about one of your essays on Native American burial practices. He told you that the watch belonged to his father, who passed away a few years ago now. So what'd you think? You asked. Weren't the sets beautiful? It was so ominous and creepy in the forest, and ethereal, too, like the fairy realm part of it. He nodded, smiling slightly wider at your enthusiasm.
Yeah, was a good production. The actors were top-notch.
Oh, incredible. That was the best bottom I've ever seen. You paused, realizing what you said, and a nervous giggle tumbled out of your mouth. Well, the character. Not the ass, donkey, whatever. You know what I mean. The man laughed, rich and deep and washing over you pleasantly, even though you half covered your face in embarrassment.
Can't argue with you there. The ass was hilarious.
He smirked. Another giggle, and you flipped through the playbill again to distract yourself from looking at his ruggedly chiseled face. Why, oh why, did he have to be so fucking attractive? And somehow he was still single. You'd heard some of the girls in your class whispering about it after class one day. A full-on engagement that fell apart years ago. But really, the actors who played the couples in the love quadrangle were awesome, you said. Helena was my favorite. He raised his dark brows.
Really? The girl who gets shit on the most in the play?
That was another thing. He didn't really talk like any professor you'd met in your life. You let out a snort of laughter. I don't want to be her. I just think she did so well at showing that vulnerability, you explained. There's nothing worse than being in love with someone who doesn't even see you, you know? He tilted his head, his amusement fading as he listened. You felt emboldened to continue your thought. In her mind, she's probably thinking, well, even if he's yelling at me, at least he's acknowledging I exist, you said, which is incredibly sad and isn't giving Shakespeare many brownie points for feminism, but it's a reality that some women go through. After a moment, he seemed to see your point with a nod of his head.
That's fair,
he said, arching a brow.
Though I gotta hope you don't let any guy talk to you like that.
You shook your head with a smile, but before you could answer him, your phone slipped off your lap and tumbled to the dirty subway floor. You twisted away so you could reach down and grab it, but you caught that whiff of cheap cologne again. Gray beanie guy let go of the rail and bent down to scoop up your phone before you could. You offered a polite thank you and went to take it back, but he held it out of reach at the last second, giving you a teasing smile.
How about I put my number in first, so you can call me when you get home? He said. I'm Brady, by the way.
That oh-so-gracious offer was followed by a glance down your dress. You sat up straighter, adjusting the collar of your coat back over your neckline with a weary huff. You know what? I'm good with just my phone. Please? That was why you kind of hated the subway. You didn't know when you were going to have to interact with a creep trying to steal your phone, shoot his shot,
or looked down your dress as a consolation prize.
You held out your hand expectantly, but still, Brady didn't take the hint.
Aw, what? You have a boyfriend or something? He asked.
Oh my God. Are you fucking serious?
You sighed and decided a white lie was best here.
Yes, I have a boyfriend. Now give me my phone, please.
Is it like beginning stages or...
Jesus Christ, dude.
Hey, I'm just saying, maybe we can grab a bite to eat.
Then, you know, if things are going well, we could take things back to your place. He said, his brows popping with sleazy suggestion.
He still held the phone away from your grasping hand in frustration.
Hey.
A deep voice cut in. You hesitated, glancing back at Professor Winchester. He glared up at Brady with a stony look that you'd never seen on him before.
Give her the damn phone, said the professor.
His tone boded no argument. Still, Brady pushed his luck.
What? You her boyfriend or something?
The professor didn't bother to answer the question, but he stood from his seat, his long coat draped down all 6 feet in change of him, broad shoulders and calm confidence. He stared down at the lankier, scruffier pothead. Then he held out his hand. Brady shifted back on his heels, seeming to realize that he didn't want this version of Midnight on the Orient Express, the kind that ended up on the 6 o'clock news the next morning. With a roll of his eyes, Brady dropped the phone into your professor's hand, complete with a dickish quirk of his lips. Professor Winchester gestured at him to fuck off.
Walk away, he said.
To your astonishment, the Brady just tossed him a fuck you, bro, and went to the other end of the car. You stood up too, just as the subway pulled to a stop. Professor Winchester handed you the phone.
Thank you, you said quietly.
Is this your stop?
He asked, still glancing back with a suspicious eye at the asshole still glaring at your backs. You nodded, biting your lip.
Okay, come on,
the professor said. He laid a guiding hand on the small of your back and joined you in stepping out of the subway car. To your relief, Brady stayed on the train.
Thank you, you said again. Really, you didn't have to miss your exit for me.
Don't worry about it,
Dean said with a shake of his head. His frown was still in place just thinking of that fucking loser.
I'll have better peace of mind knowing you got home safe.
Once you told him that your apartment was another few blocks away, he knew he was going to be walking you home. You told him you weren't that new to the city, but in his mind, it still wasn't a safe neighborhood for a young woman to be walking around by herself at this time of night. He had no other motive than that. However, he'd been pleasantly surprised to see you tonight. You were a flash of scarlet that tumbled into his arms, the scent of your floral perfume teasing his nose before he caught sight of that little dress clinging to your curvy form, ending just a couple inches above the knee. But you drew your wool coat closer to your body, hiding the tantalizing flesh of red from view. It was for the best, he thought, as he cleared his throat and tried to find something else to focus his eyes on while you two walked together. He couldn't help but land on your face again. On your pretty painted lips, a deep, full-bodied red. It was a familiar shade. You'd worn it before while chewing the end of a pen absently in concentration during one of his lectures on the difference between skinwalkers and shapeshifters. Those long, pointed nails tapping a quiet rhythm against the plastic. It was one of your many quirks, but only now did he realize how much he'd actually noticed about you. If nothing else, he always knew he had your attention. He also knew you were getting a master's degree in English and you were taking his class as an elective. You'd actually sought him out before the semester started to make sure you got a spot in his class.
Sorry, sir, I know it's early. I've just been trying since last year to get into this class and I really wanted the chance to take it before I graduate this year.
He'd shifted in his swivel chair with his jean-clad legs casually crossed. He bounced a tennis ball against the wall, as was his habit. Mostly because it bothered Benny, who had the office next to his.
The repetitive bounce really helped him to think sometimes. It was basically his version of a fidget spinner.
You like mythology that much, huh?
Dean asked. Oh, yeah, you said, as your eyes lit up. I find it so fascinating how every culture in the world has their own stories that have still survived for thousands of years. Some of them even overlap. Like, maybe it's technically a different creature, but they have the same name, just in another language. Or it's the same creature, different backstory. It's like any novel I've ever read. Similar tropes, but the style, the packaging. That's what becomes new and creative. Amusement tugged at Dean's lips.
Same candy, different wrapper, right?
He offered. His reward was your bright smile. Yeah, exactly. He'd approved your request without a second thought. Unlike 95% of the students who came and went through his classes, you weren't just smart. You cared. You had a passion for this stuff, and it mirrored his own.
So, you like that play, huh?
He asked. Wanted to rub his hand over his face right after.
Smooth, Winchester.
But it succeeded in brightening your eyes again. Oh, yeah. People tend to think of it as one of Shakespeare's sillier plays, but it drops some interesting ideas about love, for example. All while you spoke, you spun vivid gestures with your hands. Dean's remained in his coat pockets, but watching you made his smile deepen. He liked when you got like this, so animated and alive with your thoughts. It threatened to draw him out of his somewhat jaded shell.
Oh yeah? Like what?
He asked. Not because he really wanted to talk about what some 16th century, ye olde English douche thought about love, but because he wanted to hear you explain it. You didn't disappoint. Well, there's the famous Lysander line. The course of true love never did run smooth, you said. That's not even my favorite. That's boring. That's every rom-com ever, from Harry Met Sally to While You Were Sleeping, all the way to He's Just Not That Into You and Crazy Stupid Love. Dean had to interject.
You watch a lot of chick flicks, don't you?
Your lips puckered, but the amusement in your eyes answered his question. Like I said, I think Helena is the most underrated tragic figure in the whole story. Yeah, she's pretty much a doormat, following Demetrius around even though he claims he's in love with her best friend. Even though he curses at her, threatens to kill her if she keeps annoying him, following him around like an abused puppy. We can agree, he's like the biggest asshole in existence, right? You said.
Oh, very much agree. You want some coffee?
Dean asked, pointing to a guy selling warm pretzels and drinks from his vendor cart on the side of the road. It had stopped snowing a few days ago, but the February air was still sharp and bitterly cold at this time of night. If only it were midsummer. You know what? I could go for some tea. Thank you, he said. But you didn't let that derail you from your thoughts on Shakespearean love. You were still waxing literary analysis while you dug into your purse to find your wallet, but by the time you got it out, Dean had already paid for both drinks and a large, soft-baked pretzel. Your brows furrowed. Oh, I meant to pay for my part.
Don't worry about it. Here, take half.
Dean said, and he shot you a smile while handing over your hot tea and half of his pretzel. He got your eyes to light up for a different reason as you took the treat. You thanked him with a sweeter smile. Then you took a bite and you kept talking. But then she says, love can transpose to form and dignity. It can make us act like idiots, right? I mean, back in high school, I wrote my boyfriend's essays for a whole year because I didn't want him to fail English. And let's face it, he could barely spell his own last name.
Yikes.
Dean chuckled. Sounded like a GED and a gas station job in that guy's future. Right. And what did he do? He dumped me the week before prom because he knew Ruby Summers would put out. You rolled your eyes, accepting Dean's sympathies with a gracious nod and a dismissive hand wave. Still, he hoped all you'd given to that guy was your time.
Well, The guy you're seeing now better be treating you better,
he said. You blinked, your brows furrowing a bit in confusion, until realization dawned on you.
Oh, I don't have a boyfriend, you said with a small chuckle. That's just what I tell pushy weirdos on subways.
Dean was tripped up for a second, but he eventually quirked a smile.
So, anyway, my favorite bar of the whole play is what Helena says in Act One, you said. Love looks not with the eyes, but with the mind. In that moment, Dean's eyes were a little too captivated. But you broke the spell. You glanced ahead to continue along the crosswalk with him, taking another warm, soft bite of pretzel. And that's why Cupid's always painted like a blind baby, or something like that, you said. You laughed a little, and you seemed to realize just how long you'd been yapping his ear off. You came to a stop at what he assumed was your apartment building, but you suddenly got quiet, embarrassed.
Sorry, once I open my mouth on this stuff, I can't really stop unless someone stops me and tells me I'm literally killing them with words that don't make sense.
You're making a whole lot of sense to me,
Dean replied, and he realized that he meant it. He rubbed his chin in thought.
Love looks not with the eyes, but with the mind. I like that.
Your mind seemed to be a hamster wheel on steroids. He kind of liked that, too.
Well, did you like the play?
You asked, smiling in embarrassment.
Sorry, can't remember if I even asked you that yet.
He chuckled. Even if you had, he didn't mind answering again.
I like it more now, hearing you talk about it,
he said. But maybe that was too honest. He patted it with something more appropriate as your instructor.
It makes sense, since you're an English major, but your passion always comes through in your essays. I'm really glad you decided to take my class this semester.
You demurred further at the praise.
Oh, thank you. It really is my favorite class so far this year, but that's because you're the one teaching it. You're really good at telling stories. You make them simple and easy to understand. Even when we're talking about hellhounds and old ghost stories, or the Oedipus complex or something.
Dean chuckled, but it was his turn to be touched, even if it surprised him, too. You were just so honest and free enough to speak your mind. It was refreshing.
Well, thank you. Glad to hear at least one person's getting something out of it,
he said, his smile warming for once. You smiled too, looking at him through your lashes.
All right, well, thanks again for walking me home. See you on Monday, yay.
You stepped up onto the first stair leading up to your apartment and caught an icy patch with your red-bottomed heels. A gasp fell from your lips as your arms spun out to catch yourself on anything that could keep you from falling, and that happened to be Dean, specifically his coat and then his biceps when he moved in fast to keep you upright. He ended up gathering you into his arms while you clung to his coat. Your red nails bit into the dark fabric. In his mind's eye, he could imagine them popping the buttons of his dress shirt, carving shaky lines of heat and pleasure across his skin.
Fuck.
He bit the inside of his cheek hard to rid himself of that image, his jaw ticking in response. But another one just replaced it when his gaze met yours, half-lidded and shocked, but contemplating. Hot breaths mingled in between, puffing visibly on the cold air.
God, I'm sorry, you breathed.
Don't worry about it.
He cleared his throat past the slight roughness in his voice.
You all right?
Yeah, take two,
you said, laughing weakly. You aimed to let him go and continue on up the stairs by yourself, but Dean couldn't stop himself from trying to help you. He held your elbow, at least, with a hovering hand by your waist in case you slipped again. When you finally made it to the door, you paused and turned to look at him over your shoulder. Again, that look in your eyes said you were debating something in your mind.
You okay?
He asked again. You nodded.
Yeah, I just, you know what? Never mind. Good night.
Dean nodded, giving you a casual salute. He didn't leave until you got in the building safely, but for his entire long walk home, your face wouldn't leave his mind. That look of internal conflict, like you'd been weighing some kind of pros and cons. He had to wonder, had you been about to invite him up to your apartment? But no. Fucking no. He dismissed that thought as soon as it came. He was almost 10 years older than you.
Didn't stop Catherine Zeta-Jones from hooking up with Michael Douglas. She's barely pushing 50 while he's halfway into senior depends.
Second problem, career ending and reputation ruining and his own clock punch at the local 7-Eleven, kind of a problem. You were a student.
Grad student, came a whisper from the back of his mind.
In Greek mythology, the golden apples of Hesperides in Hera's garden were guarded by a dragon. The Norse gods also believed in their own version of immortal golden apples harvested by the goddess Idun. Sounded a bit like Eden, right? As in the Judeo-Christian garden. As in forbidden fruit. What did they all have in common? There was always a consequence for the taking and sampling part. The question was, is the price worth how good it tastes? Remembering the feeling of your soft curves under his hands, Dean had a feeling it would be more than fucking worth it. But he shook the thought from his head, his fingertips digging into the soft insides of his coat pockets. He was your professor. That was where those thoughts should end. You didn't even see him that way, did you? You shucked your heels off as soon as you got inside your apartment. You heaved a deep sigh and shed your purse, your coat, your earrings, and necklace, which you set down on the nightstand in your bedroom. You sat on the edge of the bed and fell back onto the creaky mattress. Your hands came to rest lightly over your stomach, a safe place, while you thought back to how Professor Winchester held you so tight, secure, gentlemanly. How he looked at you, his green-eyed gaze falling to your lips, like he was contemplating the best way to close that distance, bowing his head those last few inches, and you forcibly shook your head. He was your goddamn teacher. It didn't matter that he was probably the youngest faculty member on campus, and you were a 25-year-old graduate student. Whether or not the man was age-appropriate, he was still your professor. You couldn't think about him like that. And he absolutely didn't look at you like that. Did he?